You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, Alex.
Hi, Nick.
What's that little... Yeah. Yeah, you coughing a little bit there, buddy?
I am. I got a tickle in my lungs.
Is that... Is that tickle called COVID?
It could be. It could be.
It could be.
You're being really judgmental about the fact that I have caught COVID last week.
Let me tell you something right now, okay? So of calls that I don't want to get in 2020, One of the calls I don't want to get is that my best friend and his wife have COVID-19. Do you know what I mean? Not a great call to get. Of course I'm going to be worried. Of course I'm going to be concerned. You're treating it like you're at the freaking Disney World.
You're exaggerating because I didn't call because I couldn't because I had COVID. So I texted because I was too sick to make a phone call.
This is going to be a trash show.
It really, I have to make light of it. My wife and I are fine. We went through the hard part of the fevers and the things. It's not fun. Obviously, it's not fun. And I could see if there were underlying health conditions, if I was in a vulnerable demographic, it would be a terrifying thing. So please take it seriously because it is a very serious thing. Luckily, my wife and I got through relatively unscathed. I can't smell anything.
Yeah.
But besides that.
You know why that is, though?
Why is that?
I can say this honestly. Because you're fucking white.
Yes. There it is.
Little justice. Fuck yeah.
An applicable time for your little thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this horrible thing we do called Little Justice. I am Nick Walker. Who are you?
Up until now, I've been Alex Smolo.
Now you are COVID patient Alex Smolo. We are very happy that you and Emily are on the mend. Is a good thing. We're also happy because we have an amazing guest here with us. This woman was brought into my life. I'd say like Jenny, how long ago was this? Was this like 2 months ago that we talked for the first time?
It had to have been. Let's just say yes.
Yeah, let's say yes and go with it. Jenny Curtis here. Jenny is an amazing actor, improver, kind of podcast guru. Her podcast, which I was just on, literally 2 days ago, is Hollywood Unscripted with the Kurt Comedia. It's incredible. You got to go check it out. Jenny Curtis, welcome to the show. We're so happy to have you here.
Thank you. Wow, I've never heard myself introduced before. That was fun.
Oh, dude, no, this is the first in a long line. So how are you doing? We know that Alex is a sick, bedridden mess. How are you feeling, Jenny?
Well, I feel like I'm not allowed to complain about anything because Alex is still here.
No, please feel free. I'm fine. You guys are so sweet. Oh my God.
I am doing well. We'll say that. I did sleep a little funny, so my back is all messed up, but I'm going to be like a spokesperson for the STEM machine. If you guys don't have one of these little electrocution things. Yeah,
Talk to us about that.
Oh, so there are these... I don't have the vocabulary for this, but you put these sticky things on your back and you turn on this little machine and it electrocutes you and your muscles go all spazzy.
Yep.
It's a godsend.
My wife has one for menstrual cramps. Where you put it on the front. It's kind of the same thing, like the little sticky pads you put on it. And
that's incredible.
I've never tried that.
It simulates muscles so you're not cramping and hurt. That sounds great. Maybe I'll stick them on my back because my back hurts.
I don't think I would survive without this little thing.
Yeah. So I have these, Alex, have we talked about we've talked about my bionic legs. We talked about those, right?
If we did, I promptly forgot. I'm sure that you've told me about
Jenny.
You've got so many like rituals and weird
rituals
little
and
devices
gizmos and gadgets.
Stuff. Yeah.
So Jenny, have you ever heard of Normatec boots?
No.
So Normatec boots, I think, are right in line with everything that everybody's talking about right now. Normatec boots are these boots that I have. I'm staring at them right now. They're in the corner of my bedroom. And basically, essentially what they are is like almost like, I mean, it's just kind of advanced compression. So like a lot of athletes use them. We use them for Broadway stuff all the time, especially those of us who can't dance like myself. And what they do is essentially... It's like you know when you're getting your blood pressure taken and they squeeze the thing on your arm, right? Uh-huh. Like imagine that, but imagine that run by a machine for your entire lower body. So ooh. Like it is literally squeezing the lactic acid, flushing it up and out of your legs. So like anytime if you've ever worked out or like, you know, done some major stuff like, you know, squats, lunges, whatever, and your legs are feeling crappy, like you put these on, I swear to God, like it's like you have new legs. They are the most incredible invention. And I use them often, I was using them often when Broadway was a thing before it was in a coma. Very helpful, very helpful. So
I just wear them around the house.
Well, you can't walk in
them, Alex.
Do you
have to, like, plug them in?
Well, you know what you do? You charge the little remote there, and then you don't have to plug it in, right? Mm-hmm. As long as it's charged.
And then you can walk around the house?
You can.
I'm picturing big ski boots.
Yeah, that's exactly. That's perfect.
Honestly, what I'm picturing is like a full body hug. So it sounds really useful for a time of COVID when there's no one around.
Jenny, and let me tell you, it is a full body hug because they do in fact have like a torso attachment and arms. So you can.
It's like a weighted, a gravity blanket for your insides.
That's weird. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. Jenny, we're going to get off gravity blankets. We're going to talk a little about you. So,
okay.
No, this is what we got to do.
I'm ready. You are I've prepped.
An amazing, prepped. Excellent. We don't like prep here. There's no prep. You are an amazing podcast host, but you're also, I have to say, I spent the week kind of doing a deep dive and seeing some of your work, looking at your reels.
Oh, my.
Talk to me. I would like to talk about this improv thing you do, my friend, because you are kind of hysterical.
Oh, that means more to me than I could ever tell you. I did improv. What you probably saw was my live improv reel, which was I was in a group called the Mad Jackrats, which I haven't been in. It's been about 2 years, maybe a year.
Okay.
I don't have time on my brain. But
nope.
Improv has been something that I deeply love. And so when I kind of got into podcasting, which tends to be most of what I do now, we started an improv podcast called When Last I Left, which if anybody likes just idiotic, that's all I can say about it, go and listen to it. But it is an improv podcast that we had to stop doing because of COVID and we couldn't all be together. So,
snap. You know,
here we go. Okay. But I don't know what to talk. Yeah, sometimes I improv. I like it a lot.
I mean, I can guarantee you that anybody who's listening to this podcast loves idiotic things. So, like, you will have a bunch of new listeners on that. I'm so sorry that COVID stopped you. But, I mean, that's not the only group you're involved in. You also have the Speakeasy Society.
Mm-hmm.
That started from school, correct? From
Yeah, so Speakeasy Society is this unbelievable group. So immersive theater, in case anybody doesn't know what immersive theater is a full show that the audience is a part of. So when you come to one of our shows, you are a member of the cast. Essentially, you are running how things happen based on what you do. The show reacts to you. And so Speakeasy started at CalArts because I went to CalArts and several of the artistic directors all met there, created this company. And have since put on just a ton of shows. And I officially joined the group a few years ago, and we've done pieces. We did a party called a Wild Party. Let me try that again. A show called Wild Party that... It's early. I don't know. It's not that early. I've been up since 5. Okay.
Nice. Let me try.
You guys, I told you, I'm gonna
we
make
love
a fool
it.
Of myself.
That's what we want this. It's why you're here. Please continue.
So Wild Party was basically we threw this big event. I think there was like 100 people actually at the party itself, and the premise was that F. Scott Fitzgerald and Zelda were throwing a party, and then you know shit goes down because they were crazy, and so. I don't know. I'm just going to keep talking about shows.
No, I love
it. Keep it up. Yeah.
Keep it up. Okay. Thank you for the encouragement. God, that's all I need.
No, this is, well, I mean, but no, what I love about immersive theater, right? Because I think that they're, especially for those of us who are in the theater, who go to the theater often, right? That separation from the audience can mm-hmm. always feel a little like I find as a performer that, you know, people, you know, they pay their tickets. They work hard to get this money, and then they pay their tickets and they come sit down. And, you know, if it's a Broadway show or a Broadway play, they sit back and expect to be entertained. Mm-hmm. And there's no onus. There's nothing pulling them in to engage. And I have always found that what I love about immersive theater is you often get the exact same caliber performances, if not better performances, but you are in the space. There's something that really happens when it's, I mean, it's the same thing of a, you know, same kind of rules of a haunted house, right? I mean, because that, I mean, haunted house is actually, if you think about it, like an incredible immersive performance. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you go to Universal Studios Hollywood, that's exactly what they're doing down there. You're throwing people into these spaces with actors, and you're all breathing the same air, COVID, and you are all, but there is something that happens where all of a sudden you are a part of the story.
Yeah,
and that is that. Yeah, go.
And it's been honestly life changing in how I approach my work. Because so we did a show called The Johnny Cycle, which is based on Dalton Trumbo's Johnny Got His Gun, which if you've read it, it's not a comedy. So it's World War One. Somebody gets all of his limbs blown off, and his
that sounds hilarious.
So funny. Yeah. He loses his sight, all of his senses essentially. And he's just a lump of flesh in a hospital trying to figure out how to communicate and where he is. And so we did a show because we thought, why not? We did a show. Basically, the audience was Johnny. So you are the title character who is in the hospital, and this entire show is taking place in your brain and your memories. And so it gave us the permission to kind of be really fluid in what floats in and what you're thinking about and what we're trying to make you think about. And I got to play like Johnny's mom who, you know, my son never came home. So I got to spend 2.5 hours running around crying, which is my favorite thing to do.
Yay.
And
that's amazing.
But it's been, it was really interesting to me. And I think I've said this, you know, if I'm going to talk about the main thing I learned about, audience interaction and immersive theater was I had this monologue at the end, and I am just putting everything of myself into it. And it's really interesting to see how people are reacting, because I'm a foot away from you. I can see if you're looking at me or if you're disengaged or whatever. And there was one night where a woman literally faced her entire body away from me and was staring at the wall, but like behind her. And it threw me a little bit, and it was kind of, it took me a second to kind of get back on track and be like, okay, I can't focus on this one woman when there's 10 people surrounding me. And then at the end of the monologue, she turned around and I saw that she had been crying, and she just didn't want to be looking me in the eyes. And it kind of goes back to what you were saying, Nick, about like the audience engagement and being able to really be a part of it. Of you don't know what's connecting with someone when you're in a proscenium theater. And when you're face to face, it really changes the dynamic of how you connect. And so, I love immersive theater. I cannot wait until COVID is over and I can touch people's faces again.
No, you got it. I mean, I can't wait till COVID is over and I can punch Alex in the face again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that'll be fun.
That'll be
super fun. There you go. Jenny's in on it. See? No, but to your point, Jenny, I think that's exactly right. And I love your passion for it. It reminds me, did you ever get to see, I don't know if it ever came out of LA way, but in New York, there was this immersive production of Sweeney Todd at the Barrow Street Theater. Oh my God. I mean, I think we've talked about it on this podcast, Alex.
Yeah, I think when we talked about Sweeney, movie.
The movie Sweeney. It was this incredible production at the Barrow Street Theater where they turned, it was a small theater space, but they turned the theater into a pie shop. And so like you'd come 30 minutes before, you get pies and then like the actors were standing on the tables. Like it was,
it's amazing. I mean, the best theater that I experienced in LA was an interactive version of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, shit.
Hell yeah.
Where you come in, they bring you in. It's a limited audience of like 15, 20 people. They basically like, they don't put you in a straitjacket like you're tied up, but you become an inmate in the asylum. You go in and so you're in the room and then you sort of shift off, and they do it in phases. So like every now and then the production stops at a point where you can then wander around and like, it's almost like escape roomy where there's like clues and stuff hidden. You find clues to find answers. And there's like a little bar. You have like drink tickets that you can earn by solving, these riddles. And
your
stuff.
Reward for solving things is drinking.
Right. Oh, yeah. And the actors who you're watching perform are also wandering around acting on you, right? Like they're all acting against you. And then you go back to your seat, quote unquote, and then you watch them and like the performance, and then you watch like really great performances and then it breaks back. And it's just, it was such a fascinating thing to spend, you know, to spend a couple hours doing. Like it's like a theater enhancement to me, where it's not just sitting in a dark room, you know.
Can I tell you guys about my dream for like the perfect, what I think would be the perfect immersive theater / kind of haunted house? And here's the thing. If either of you steal this from me and build it before I do, I will actually kill you. I will find you. I don't care. Like, it's because nobody's done this yet, and I don't understand why. There was a comic that came out by Grant Morrison called Arkham Asylum, A Serious House on Serious Earth. Has anybody ever read it?
No.
No? Great. Okay.
Back in my day, I read, what is it?
Back before you got COVID?
Got COVID, yeah, it was my favorite book.
Arkham Asylum, A Serious House on Serious Earth by Grant Morrison. It's a beautiful comic. So Jenny, I'm a huge Batman fan, if you didn't know. This comic is really kind of this very strange, creepy comic where it's basically that the plot is that Joker has broken out of his cell in Arkham Asylum and has taken the staff hostage, and Batman is sent to come and, you know, negotiate the hostage situation. The only person they're going to talk to is Batman, and what it becomes, you know, he goes in there and you know, he has these lines before he's outside. He's with Commissioner Gordon. Commissioner Gordon's like, "Are you sure you want to go in there?" And he's like, "You know, I'm paraphrasing here, but he says, you know, I'm not afraid of anything they'll do to me in there, Jim. What I'm afraid of is that I'll go in there and I'll feel like I'm home." And it's just, the whole comic is about how he feels just as crazy as they are. Like, and that's the truth, right? He's literally a needle's edge.
As crazy as they are.
As he is. But it's, the comic is just him walking from cell to cell, interacting with all of his villains who really are just reflections of him. But like, it's drawn in this crazy, like almost Jackson Pollock-esque way, like just splatter lines everywhere. Like there's no vector lines. It's all like free form, just paint everywhere. It is really a beautiful and haunting story. And my dream has always been to like put people in the situation. You're Batman and you're walking through. Yeah. If somebody's already done it, I'll cry right now.
Is DC, does DC have theme park presence, like at Universal or anything
Universal is WB, so that's them. I don't know if
like
they're
Arkham Asylum as an idea, in no matter how they did it, would work so well as like a bizarro ride.
I'm sure they've done it. Sure I'm going to look it up and they've done it. But that,
I mean,
but
if they haven't, now's the time to craft the pitch and send
it
over
right.
to
yes,
them.
Seriously.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you guys aren't doing anything. Look at my pitch, please. no, but that's so true. So we love that. So Jenny, you know, obviously you're an incredible artist. Talk to me then how this podcast came about, because this is a very different, I mean, it actually, in a way, it's kind of similar principles of immersive theater, right? You're kind of bringing us into the behind the scenes, bringing us closer to these artists who we may know and love. I'm just looking at your work and finding the patterns. But where did this come from for you? How did this start?
Okay, so to take it all the way back, Kurtco Media, and this is something that I struggled with talking about for a little while because nepotism is looked down upon, but Kurtco Media is my father's company. And for 30 years, he published magazines, and the magazines went, you know, in a certain direction with the way society moved. And so then he decided in the past couple of years, he was trying to figure out what he wanted to do with his company now that the world is different. And he landed on podcasting because it's this amazing realm that has kind of always been around in radio, but it's kind of new in how everybody's, like you said, interacting and connecting. And so he started this company. And for the first time in my life, because I had, you know, I was the independent middle child who was going to go off and do my own thing as an artist and not work for the family company. Nice. And then he had this company that was in production, and I had a decade of production under my belt. So I started helping out, just kind of talking through things and giving a little bit of it, a little bit of advice. And within like a month of him starting the company, I worked there, which was never in the cards before. But, you know, I kind of find that the way my path has worked is I just follow whatever the next curve is. I don't plan too far ahead. And so I ended up working at Kurtco as a producer, and Hollywood Unscripted was originally not my show. The first season was a collaboration with the Malibu Film Society, and our host was named Scott Talal. And I just came on to produce the show, and it was so much fun to listen to. And, you know, everything I love is creating and movies and all of these wonderful things. And after the first season and Scott and Kurtco parted ways, and we needed someone to kind of keep the conversations going. So I hopped in as a host, not really anticipating staying, but I did, is really the short answer to that. And it has been, I think I started being a host basically the first or second week of quarantine. And this and my other podcast, A Moment of Your Time, is really how I have made it through this whole time, because I spend all of my time thinking about creating and helping other people create and talking to people about how they create. And it has been, I guess, the only thing that gives me a little bit of solace in a time that we were all kind of stuck far away from each other. So, yeah.
But like, also, let's, you know, it's not like you just kind of, oh yeah, I fell into a podcast. I mean, your podcast is getting some amazing people to talk to. You know what I mean? Like, you have talked to, Julie Taymor, Jim Sturgis. I mean, like, Lance Reddick, who's literally one of my heroes.
God, Lance was amazing. If Lucky. You haven't listened to that episode, go. Yeah, I could talk to him all day. He was fantastic. I think I did. I think I went like an hour over our scheduled time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's smart. I think you keep Lance Reddick in the room as long as you can.
Seriously.
I don't care what else your schedule's doing. You're here now.
He was phenomenal. Then that's really what it is. I keep telling all of my guests, I'm like, will you stay an extra 5 minutes? And it's really dependent on if they're willing to talk to me, which a lot of them have been. And that's been, I don't know why these people want to talk to me. I'm a very self-deprecating person, in case we can't tell that. But
welcome to the club.
Yeah. I honestly, it's been just, I don't know how these people are saying yes, but they are. And then once we're in the virtual room together, it's just a wonderful, beautiful conversation about life and love of art. And I mean, Nick, you joining the conversation made it astronomically better, in my opinion. But you got the feeling of it, if it's just kind of the same thing you guys are doing here, where you just talk, but like, it's all about passion. And I think that's what people want to hear about, rather than, I don't know.
I completely agree. I think that one of the things that I've found, you know, when we had the first idea for this podcast, which was so many years ago, with tapes that shall never be found, locked away in the cabinet, as we've said before, don't try to find them. We really wanted to be like film critique and like do all this, you know, like review things and shit. And we didn't know shit. So like, what the fuck are we doing reviewing shit? Like, you know what I mean? Like, like, no, like, stop. And I think that we have found just our niche as two people who just love this stuff, you know, who love this art, you know?
And that's what people need more of. Just there's so much critique out there, and there are things that deserve to be critiqued, but also like once in a while, it's okay to just say, hey, I really love what you're doing. And I think it was Paul Thomas Anderson who had a quote that I now don't have in front of me, but he basically said, like, you should never say you hate a movie or you hate something someone's done. You say it's not for you, because it doesn't help the artistic world to just shut something down.
Right.
And I feel like to be able to say, like, I love something or I really enjoy what you did with this is it's an important part of keeping people creative.
Yeah. Yeah. That's huge. That's huge.
Yeah.
You hear that, Alex? That's what's important.
I do. Well, that I think that's where we kind of went astray in the early days of trying to do this was like, it's so easy when you're doing like quote unquote criticism to be unnecessarily critical, right? Mm-hmm. To have a negative spin on it instead of a positive one. Because you can be critical while still maintaining a positive approach.
Yeah.
And I think that the difference is pretty vast, especially when no one asked you in the first place.
Literally no one asked you.
You know, when it's to be putting yourself in a position to just get out in front of people and be like, this is dumb, I hate it. Like when nobody cared anyway. It's like, okay.
Yeah, like, what are you doing
at that point? Yeah, exactly.
Please stop. Please stop. You know, like, I think that's why I love our podcast, because now we're here just like, you know, Hollywood Unscripted, just trying to create community,
talking to interesting people about mm-hmm. things we love.
Almost like we're gathered around a table during the holidays.
See how it is. But independently, right? Still together with family, but not together.
But do you see how I did that, though, Alex? You see how I put the theme
of
the show? That's the theme
of
our show.
Holidays. I missed it.
Oh,
God damn it,
wow.
Alex.
I missed it too.
I did a great pivot.
I guess it's not that great if we both miss the pivot.
So well, shut the I don't care. I don't care. I tried for the pivot.
You're trying, man. We're working on it. You're building it. Usually,
I'm building it up.
Because I had it going. I was waiting for my opportunity to slip in with it. But you've taken the initiative in the last few to get in there.
I'm really trying to get in there and pivot.
I want
for
my
us.
Job back.
Yeah, well, I want my healthy friend back. How about that? Yeah, Jesus Christ. So yes, today, you know, now's the part where we talk about movies. You know, like we promised we'd do. Right,
okay.
We are a movie pod. Like people forget that everyone comes on here. And
well, you guys are just so much fun to talk to.
Aw, thank you.
Yeah.
That's very kind. Mm. But yeah, we do movies. We talk about movies here. So today we're talking about the holiday movies, and we are recording this maybe I think 5 days out from Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so holidays. The holiday season has well begun.
It's here. I mean, it's been here in our house since the beginning of November. I think
soon
as Halloween was over, we pulled
out
because
really
we got
right
the little fake tree with the ornaments with our initials on them and like little string lights and stuff. Well, yeah, because what is more cozy than an apartment that's been holidayified, right? Like
mm-hmm.
there's nothing better than candles and string lights. And that's it, really. And little metal reindeer.
I used to have a rule that like it wasn't until the day after Thanksgiving that my like real holiday would start. But, you know, this year... holidays, yeah. We need them.
Well, that's the thing. I think the idea of holiday has expanded a little bit. Like the holiday season should be treated, I think, with what people treat Christmas as, right? Like,
agree.
Take Christmas out of holiday and spread it across 2.5 months. Mm-hmm. And you've got like, cause it's still the same thing, right? It's about warmth and hearth and home and family and love and comfort and all. Like, it's just a nice way to spend time. And why limit that to, you know,
Sorry, no, weeks. I'm laughing at the cough.
No, laugh at him.
This is not a nice way to spend time. But I'll be good to go by holiday season. So
good. No, but it's so funny because my wife is the opposite with all these things. She if Sarah could extend Halloween into forever, she would. And there's no day
she should.
She does.
She should just do it.
Oh no, she automatically does. No. We don't take the Halloween decorations down till maybe December 15th. Like they really do stay up, and that's just how it is in our home.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, being married to you is a scary thing.
It's terrifying. I'm very confused as to how we've lived, how we've done this long.
Like, because really, you're a walking Halloween decoration.
Nick. I am. I'm. That was a good one. That's. I wish it was there a Halloween episode. That would be a good pivot. But
oh,
it's
we
not.
Can do a Halloween episode. We
did
can.
We do? Slasher was kind of. Wasn't Slasher a Halloween episode?
Yeah, but we got. I we can do kinda. More. We can go back.
All right, yeah. Specific we got, movies about Halloween.
Yeah, we got Jenny now. We can do the Halloween.
We can do whatever
we want. I can talk
about
Halloween. I can pivot. Yes. I mean,
you can pivot.
You know, I might panic about it for a minute, but
all right, let's do a lightning round Halloween right now.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Lightning round Halloween movie. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Everybody gets one. Everybody gets 1 minute.
I
rapid
love that.
Fire. Okay, Nick, line it up.
Wait, the movie. Like, describe the movie.
Yep. We're right. Rapid
lightning
fire.
Round, lightning round. Lightning yep. round. All right. I gotta go. So it's. It begins with some. I think. I mean, if the movie. See, I haven't watched it in a minute, but the movie begins with some narration. It's Hocus Pocus. It's Hocus Pocus.
I know. So was mine. The only Halloween movie that exists is Hocus Pocus somehow.
So true.
Which we watched on Halloween. Like, what is it about that movie?
It's so good.
It's perfect. Really, I mean, it's kind of problematic, but it's also perfect.
Hugely problematic. Let's not talk about anyone's yabos, especially not someone who's under the age of 19. Can we not do that, please?
Yeah, let's tell children it's really embarrassing to be a virgin, you know, all of those
wonderful things. Super embarrassing.
My favorite part is, for some reason, in like the early 90s, like the thing for like preteens was the dudes in the like billowy... like colonial yes. shirts
yes,
that V-neck down here that are like with strings tied on them and stuff. It was like the kid in Casper came out wearing one, and all
Devin
the
Sawa.
Young people, Devin Sawa, like everybody in all these movies, that was like the hot thing for like 11-year-olds.
Do you think? Bizarre. Do you think that it was because Daniel Day-Lewis wore one in The Crucible, and then
honestly, maybe
that was it.
That's why we're being kind of a
maybe.
Crucible. Point.
That was 100%. I mean, honestly, in real history, I'm sure they were all in t-shirts. So it just yes. movies dictate yeah. what we do, you know.
100%.
So Daniel Day-Lewis,
t-shirts and jeans, and then Daniel Day-Lewis fucks it up like he always does for everyone. Yeah, man. No, Thackeray Binks all the way. Team Pinks.
Thackeray.
Oh, Thackeray.
I asked Emine if we could name our kid Thackeray, and she turned me down promptly. But
what?
I'm holding out hope.
Yeah, just do Thack. It. Get
yeah,
to the birth certificate first, you know?
His name is Thack. Like, nice.
Just erase
Little
the birth thack-y. Certificate.
Erase the birth certificate. Slip the doctor a 20. Like, here, just
take,
change
just
that
take.
Z to a TH.
That's right. But
God,
no,
that would
let's.
Be just...
Oh, it'd be brilliant. It'd be mm-hmm. brilliant. And he will do it. So let's, you heard it here first, folks.
Thackeray. It's like Zachary with a lisp. But funny story, my sister, Shayna, my
Shayna?
Parents always. My parents always talk about how they wanted to name her Sarah, but my dad was worried that she would have a lisp, and then she'd go around saying, my name is Thera. That's what he was worried about for some reason. So they turn around and name her Shayna.
That doesn't make any sense.
It literally doesn't make any sense. It's like more lisp prone Thena than like, I don't know. That's the family.
Who knows?
I come from.
Listen, that's a great family.
It's a beautiful thing.
It's a beautiful thing, you know, but yeah. Shayna, you're beautiful either way, and you know that. And that's
Shayna, I like your name. Yeah.
Shayna's a beautiful name.
Shayna's a beautiful name. Nick can stay away.
And there's like a million Sarahs, you know?
There are, but only one of them is my wife, and I have to say that.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Don't be sorry. No, don't be sorry. I have to say that, or else I will be killed.
Yeah, there's only one Sarah.
There's only one. No, there's only one. There's only one. There's only one. One. But yeah, back to the holiday movies, which is, see, that's the thing. We just get off, you know, we go off into crazy tangents
sorry.
Here. But no, don't
we're
be sorry.
We're on holiday. Holiday is about enjoying the time that you have with the people you love. And that's what we're doing. So
that's
we
exactly
are stick. We're on theme this whole time.
Well, let me ask you guys. There it is. Let me ask you guys, what constitutes a holiday movie for y'all? Because I find, you know, listening back to our pod, I find that we sometimes, or I sometimes, kind of zhuzh the definition of the genre that we picked. And mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, I don't necessarily play by the rules of it. I haven't for a while. So I want to know what you guys define as the holiday movie. And thusly, I will tell you if my movie pick actually falls in line with that. But what is it for you? What is the holiday movie for you?
I mean, I'm just going to say it takes place at Christmas. That's it. That's my holiday movie.
The soul thing.
Thing. Because here's my question. So are we not counting Thanksgiving movies as holiday movies? See what I'm saying?
Yeah, but Thanksgiving is part of Christmas. You know, Christmas, like we said, it starts after Halloween.
It's all wrapped up. It's all the same thing.
There's, yeah, it's just a slight variation in the dinner. It's like whatever the animal you've slaughtered in the middle of the table is defines what, the, you know, but they're both holiday.
It has to be cold out, even though we live in California, some of us, and it has to have candles lit at some kind of point.
Yeah, well, so I had this conversation with my wife last night. I was like, what is a holiday movie like? Because most of them are romances, right? And I realized, like, to me, what the holiday season is, like, really what it is that it's the creative explanation of walking into, like, a warm home. Like, walking through the door and there's people you love and food cooking and a fire going and, light, like, just comfort and safety and warmth. For whatever reason, like, that feeling, if you just put that in any holiday movie, like that's what makes it feel that way, in some weird way, like that. So that to me, and I guess it doesn't even need to be on a holiday to have that feeling, but there's the Christmas magic, you know, the holiday magic. Like, I think that's what people are talking about.
See, yeah. I love your definition. Now your definition makes me feel a whole lot better about what I've
chosen. Okay, good. Good.
Cause I think you're right. I think it's not just for the characters in the movie. I also think that a good holiday movie is a movie that does that for your family, right?
Yeah.
You want to gather around and watch this movie, and it reminds you of those warm feelings and the dinner on the table and all those things. You know, that's I think where it can fall. You know,
I'm sure that per person it changes too, because not everyone is lucky enough to have that situation, right? Like, that goes all the way back to childhood. Like, some people are not in situations where that, but I'm sure that there's some idea that they have of what, like, home and hearth is. And that can, I mean, it can translate into so many different directions.
You really love that word hearth.
Hearth. I really do.
It's a good
love
word.
Hearth. We should really be.
Is it a noun? I'm going to check. Hearth. I have to check.
Yeah.
Is it? Oh, yeah.
Isn't it?
Oh, he is. He's right. He's a fucking noun. I'm fucking.
Of course it is. The floor of a fireplace. Everyone should have the floor in their fireplace.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that that's what it was. Or the area.
I actually didn't know
fireplace.
That's that.
No, that's what I'm saying. He was just. That's what. Alex is just out here shooting in the dark with words.
Used as a symbol of one's home. He left hearth and home to train in Denmark.
Ugh, so you
that's
left
the, that's the sentence that Google's
of your
giving us.
Yeah, to go train in Denmark.
To go train for what? What are you training
for? I don't
know.
No, I think he just wanted to take a train in Denmark.
To go, like, take a train to
he left
Denmark.
The safety of his hearth and home to,
to go
not
take,
a, train. Take a train to Denmark, to go to Denmark and train around. Just ride that's... trains around Denmark.
Sounds
his
like a
his family's basically excommunicated him. He's that's why he left.
Poor
he's
guy.
Obsessed with trains. It's weird.
Yeah,
but trains are also a holiday thing, you know? So
they very
trains
much
can
are.
Be. They can yeah. be.
Because absolutely. They're safe and they're warm. Like, and that's why, like, cold and all that, like, because the outside is so brutal, right? Mm-hmm. That's what makes the inside being warm and cozy, because outside it's supposed to be snowing and the world is supposed to be chaotic. Like, the holiday season is going to be great for people this year, as long as they're being safe about it. Just because of what's going on outside. I don't think it's a coincidence that the most popular holiday in the world takes place at the end of the year, right? At a time when people have been through so much, it's like a way to cap things off and bring things back to what matters before launching into another year of just anarchy.
Oh, great.
Anarchy. So,
yeah.
Yeah, man. Well, do we want to kick this off? Obviously, we'll save Jenny's pick for last since she is the guest of honor.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Or should we take a quick breather? You want to line up?
Oh
yeah,
we should. Well, yeah, you should definitely take a breather.
You're usually. I don't want to be that guy. Like, you're the ad guy, and I do the transitions.
Okay.
All right. So you do the
guy. Yeah, I'm gonna do
or
it.
Or do you want me to do it?
No, I'm gonna. No, you know what? You do it. You do it.
Say I think
it.
We should go to an ad.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Jenny did it.
Oh, she did it.
Jenny did it. we're just gonna cut it there. That's it.
Boom.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.
Great
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Boom. Done.
Hope you enjoyed that ad brought to you by Jenny.
Jenny did the ad break, guys. It was fucking brilliant. It's fucking brilliant. That's why Jenny's here, because she's
we're gonna
the
have to cut her. We're gonna have Make to cut her in 30%.
30% of $5.
That's all I need.
$5 we're getting. That seems like that'd be great. I'd love.
You guys are making so much more than we are,
dude. Podcast life.
Oh man.
anyway, so who's Alex? Which one of us is going for this?
I can start. So whereas you might be, you know, trying to be a bad boy, choosing something off the grid.
Shut up.
I leaned right into it, and I was excited to do it.
Okay.
And
I'm really scared it's going to be the same as mine. I just have to say
it very
that
much. It,
okay.
For whatever reason, this movie seems to hook with people, and I want to talk about why that might be.
Okay.
Because it didn't get especially well reviewed. It made decent money because it's a holiday movie with big actors. But I, for some reason, I watch it every year. I just watched it again this morning, and like, I don't know. Okay, so we open on I don't even know how we open. It's basically a montage of four characters. One of them is a columnist writer. She writes for a magazine. And they're all going through relationship stuff. Mm. She is in love with her ex, who she just found out is engaged.
You idiot.
Then we go over to a musician. He scores movies. He has a relationship with somebody who doesn't really care about him, but he's too optimistic and positive to even tell at this point, right? But you can tell something's off. Cut to someone else. She cuts movie trailers for a living, and she just found out that her boyfriend was cheating on her, and she breaks up with him. And then we cut to our fourth person, who's just out at a bar, and he's like the most beautiful man you've ever seen in your whole life, and that's all you know about him. The woman who has broken up with her boyfriend decides she needs a vacation, decides to swap houses with the columnist from England. They switch between LA and Surrey, and they both proceed to fall in love with their male counterparts.
How long are we supposed to let you go on?
You could have cut me off a long time ago, but I'm just kind of watching the movie in my head right now and enjoying myself.
Like, Jenny, would you say that they were perhaps going on a holiday?
I might.
I'm interested. Renting your house. I'm wondering if your house is available this Christmas. Because if it is, you could be a real lifesaver.
I'm very interested, but the cottage is really only available for home exchange. Home exchange, what is that? We switch houses, cars, everything. I haven't done it before, but friends of mine have. Where are you? Please say somewhere far away.
I don't know what it is. Okay, so everything about this movie is middle, right?
What do you mean by that?
Everything about this is the most inoffensive, unchallenging movie that exists. Like, every character, even the problems they have, are not bad problems. Right, like, mm-hmm. like everyone's. Nobody's having money problems. Nobody's having health problems. Nobody's having the only relationship problems they have are relationships that are from the get go very obviously bad, and you do not care that these relationships are trouble.
Mm-hmm.
They are all in great situations to improve themselves, which they do throughout the entire film, and they find happiness. It's not like they're finding problems all the way through and then it ends happy. They literally are having good things happen to them the whole time, all of them.
And they have no trust issues
These two women get on a chat room and decide to imagine getting on Airbnb without Airbnb's like security and insurance and all this stuff, randomly talking to someone and saying, hey, I'll trade you my $3 million Beverly Hills mansion for your country cottage in the UK. I'll be there tomorrow and we'll just swap without even talking on the phone or anything. And they just do it. This is like kind of pre-mass internet. This is like right when the internet was believable, but nobody really knew the potential of it. So it kind of made sense that, okay, well, yeah, they could swap like that. But like both of them, they both meet these amazing men and they find themselves in these new wonderful situations, and the problems that they started with are pretty solved as they go through, and then it just ends happily ever. It's like it makes me feel all warm and fuzzy inside.
Talk to me about the cast of this movie.
The cast is incredible. Okay, so Cameron Diaz and Kate Winslet and Jude Law and Jack Black, which is like kind of an odd thing, but makes total sense in light of Kate Winslet's character and, and kind of what her match would be like, what kind of person she'd be looking
for. Well, that's what I was going to say, because when we see, you know, we see Jude Law, we see Kate Winslet, we see Cameron Diaz, and then we see Jack Black.
Well, and I mean, it covers every facet of an important relationship, and it doesn't shoehorn unrealistic personality traits onto characters who don't need them. So it uses Cameron Diaz and Jude Law as the beautiful, sexy couple who, you know, she's got major issues, but a good heart and all this stuff. And Kate Winslet doesn't really have a sex scene. They don't examine much of that part of the relationship on the Kate Winslet Jack Black side. Like they use, you know, Jude Law and Cameron Diaz for that. Because of that, it makes sense all the way through. You don't feel pandered to. You don't feel like they're, you know, you kind of believe it in a way, even though these are Barbie dolls, right? They both seem to be very well off, like lots of money and love, and they're just great people and all this stuff. Somehow it still seems believable because the relationships need each other, right? They fit each other so well. And I think, yeah, I don't know.
Well, I mean, here's my question to both of you. Because the reason I wanted to ask about the cast is you know, you are casting these people who, like, even, you know, Jack Black, is he the most conventionally handsome? No, but he has like an electric charisma, right? All these people who are put in these like you said, Alex, it's all middle of the road. Like they are in these jobs that are at once glamorous, but also not.
Yeah.
Do you mean
they make it seem like it's normal? Like everybody has a job like this. Everybody has a house like this. Like this is just normal people.
Yeah.
And they're all like 31 with, you know, these millions of dollars estates.
Just easy to do. You know, I don't remember one black person in this movie. am I correct in saying that?
Yes, maybe at one of the office parties.
Somewhere deep in the background.
Somewhere deep in the background. Yes, no, very few, very few. Yeah. And it is. It's completely whitewashed, which is not okay. I can agree to that, and I maybe have willfully, you know, removed that from my periphery.
I think the person most of color in this movie was Shannon Sossamon, if I remember correctly, and I don't even know if she's actually of color. I think I'm just making that up in my head.
I have no idea.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
The best cameo in this movie is Eli Wallach. Right, who is the ugly in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly? He's an old Western actor, like a legend in his own right. Plays an old screenwriter who gets honored at the end. Is like, just for more heartwarming stuff. This guy who doesn't believe in himself anymore, and Kate Winslet helps him. Whatever.
Learn to walk.
fun fact, Nick, the movie that you and I made together.
Borderland.
Do you remember Tyler, the costume designer?
Yeah,
that Eli Wallach's grandson.
I love that. What a treat. Jenny, what were you going to say? We rudely cut you off. What were you going
to
say?
No, not rudely at all. I was going to go jump on the critique train, which, as if we circle back to the beginning of this conversation, I said I wouldn't do. But
rip it apart, please.
The only thing I have to say, I don't have any questions about Kate Winslet and Jack Black's relationship.
No, it's beautiful.
It's beautiful, but I just want to point out that it never happens the other way around, where there's a beautiful guy and a quirky girl.
Thank you. Let's talk about it. Let's get
real. So you guys are saying that Jack Black is ugly then?
No, we're not. Quirky. God,
he's quirky. Dude, I cannot stand you. But it's so true. And I mean, and again, you're talking about a movie. When was this made? Like 2005, six or something like that?
Well, but again, and my defense of this would be because, yes, that is an obvious problem across too many movies that try to do this. Like, but in terms of looking at the two main characters, who are the two women, and what is not, what they're not able to find in themselves and in their relationships, right? Like, she is head over heels in love with a boss who uses her and, mm-hmm. and neglects her, and she keeps coming back because of how she feels about herself. So the idea that she would find somebody who, despite everything, despite having a terrible girlfriend and all this stuff, is just so content with himself. Like you could put Jack Black's traits down on a piece of paper, no matter what he looks like, and script-wise, it fits right into what that character needs.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have no problem with that. I'm just saying I want a holiday too where they reverse it, because Kate Winslet is one of the most beautiful women that's ever existed. So I want one of the most beautiful men that's ever existed who finds something that he needs in a woman who isn't stereotypically beautiful.
I think we're going to write it. I think that's what we're talking about here.
That's your next film.
That's our next film. That's what we're
doing. Hell yeah.
Yeah, we're making it happen. But it's so true. But, you know, here's the thing. Because I'm looking this up right now. Nancy Myers, who wrote it and I think directed it as well, obviously has a long, long history of, you know, classic romantic films and just classic films. And, you know, knows what she's talking about. I would say this is a person who knows how to make a good story. Mm-hmm. So not an attack on that at all. It's just funny how I think one of the things you run into with these holiday movies often is these quote unquote idealized situations, and funny how, and it's just interesting to chart how the idealization has changed from decade to decade. And you know, what we considered like acceptable in 2006 in a holiday movie today would not be the same thing. Yeah. You know, so it's just interesting to look back on.
Yeah. I guess I find a little bit of safety in naivete of films like that. Mm-hmm. And it was right why when we were doing Political Farce last week, watching Dave felt the same way, where it's like, okay, the logic of it doesn't really make sense, that whatever, but like,
It's a warm and fuzzy movie.
It's built to make you feel good. Yeah. And sometimes you just want to put away pessimism, right? You just want to feel good.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that this movie does that.
Absolutely. Well, I love that. It's a holiday or the holiday?
The
holiday.
Oh, it's the holiday.
It's the only one.
It's the only one that's ever been taken ever in a film. Not Roman holiday, not anything else. Just the holiday.
Not holiday in the sun.
Nope. None of it. None of it.
Iris.
Yes.
What are you doing New Year's Eve?
I'll be back in England by New Year's Eve.
You know, I've never been to England. I've never been to Europe.
No.
If I come over there, will you go out with me on New Year's Eve?
Well, Alex, congratulations. That was a great great pick there.
Snaps for Alex.
Yeah, snaps. Yeah, see, now we have a new tradition. Jenny's bringing on new tradition.
Snaps. Snaps is our new tradition.
Snaps. I love
snaps.
You're
going to have to snap. Yep.
We're going to have to snap. We're going to have to say Jenny's name every time we do it.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Keeping the tradition alive.
Well, there it is. All right, I'll jump in there. So, again, I just want to say, based on your definition, Alex, this is 100%.
Yeah.
A holiday movie.
All right.
And I also want to say that me and my wife watch this every year around holiday time. So, you know, it is a holiday movie in all senses of the word. All right, guys. So,
ooh, here we go.
We open on the sound of a wolf howling at the moon. Yep, you know what it is. You know, sound of a wolf howling at the moon. But is it a wolf? No. No, it's a man. It's a man standing on top of a house. We pan down. It's a dark night. There are children with their grandmother digging into the earth for something. inside. The who we assume is the father of this household is arm wrestling a friend of his. His wife sitting across from him. And all of a sudden, she looks up at her husband and she says the husband's name. And he says, "What?" She says,
"Marvelous news. I'm going to have a baby. Right now."
And they rush out of this home. They rush to the hospital. The children are sitting in the waiting room with another child. You know what it is. Come on.
I have no idea what this is.
Are you guys serious?
Oh my God. I know exactly what it is.
Well, I'm going to tell you what it is because the child, the wife is in the ER. She's getting this child out, but all the while her husband is there, she's being like ridiculously calm about having a child. She's still fully dressed, by the way. Like, she's not in a gown. Her husband is like not in scrubs. Like, it's not sanitary at all. He's just so proud of her. He calls her Cara Mia. And all of a sudden he bursts into the waiting room where the family are.
It's
like,
"It's a boy. It's a girl.
Go ahead.
What news?
Father, what is it?"
"It's an Adams."
Tell you guys something right
absolutely
now.
Holiday movie,
absolutely mm-hmm. a holiday film, even though it takes place in the summer. not at
honestly
holiday
if you
all.
Told me that it took place at Christmas, I'd believe you. Like, it had the vibes of a Christmas movie. Did the original one take place at Christmas? Like,
no, it all feels kind of like that warm, like that, like,
yeah,
it's all
about family.
Thanksgiving
and,
at some point, or am I making that up?
Well, so this movie has the Thanksgiving pageant during summer camp.
Oh.
That's what it has when he's like, "Eat me!" Like, and he's dressed like a turkey, which is one of the best scenes. Now, my first
ever crush was Christina Ricci as Wednesday Addams.
Absolutely.
Who
oh my God.
Wasn't, you know?
Oh my God.
Who, yeah, you know, and also, can we just talk about Raul Julia as Gomez Addams, who like is giving a masterclass of performance.
Beautiful.
As well as Angela, oh my God, why am I forgetting
Angelica Houston?
The Angelica Houston. As Morticia, who like literally, it's her movie, like it's out of control, and we're gonna have a whole thing about our friend Miss Cusack.
As
Debbie Jelinski.
Oh my god, I haven't seen this movie in so long; it's all flooding back to me now.
Oh my
it's
god,
it's very so, dim in my brain.
It is so. The reason why I chose this movie, right? I think I love the movies that you know, whether or not they are about the holidays or even take place on the holidays. I love the movies that you watch on the holidays. And this movie, you know, the scene in this movie with the turkey, with the Thanksgiving Day pageant, is a classic holiday scene. It's memed every Thanksgiving. Do you know what I mean? Like, people are always posting shit from it. But more what I love about this movie as a holiday movie is, you know, if we're to break it down and watch me do a critical film analysis of Addams Family Values, it is very much a reaffirmation of this family, right? This family is you know, the entire first movie, the gag of this family is that they are dark and depressing and love it that way, right? They are these weird freaks, but they love each other and they understand each other and the world just doesn't get them, right? They mm-hmm. that making the point that like the outside world, they are the freaks. The Addams are actually the normal ones because like the things that, you know, one of the things that I think is beautiful about the Addams Family is like, in a world that is literally going insane about like, how could you do this? And how could you do the Addams is like, no, that's just who we are. And like, we love each other. Like, it's totally fine to them. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's just such an acceptance. And in this second movie, which funnily enough, got better critical acclaim than the first one, but didn't do as well box office wise as sequels often don't. It was still very successful, but it just didn't do as well as they'd hoped. In this movie, you know, they kind of go the other way, right? Where they're like, cool, so this time we're not going to put them against normal people. We're going to put them like against another psychotic person to show how they are not that, right? Like, Debbie Jelinski is easily one of the best villains of 90s film. So you know, to kind of set her up, they have this new baby and they need a babysitter, and they bring in this woman, Debbie Jelinski, who is it's found out by Wednesday very early on, is a serial killer. She is known for like there's a whole news report where it's like she gets with rich men and then she kills them and steals their money, and like it's this whole thing. And Debbie Jelinski, played by the amazing Joan Cusack, is basically like a Barbie doll on crack. Like, she is insane from the moment she steps foot in this house, and it only gets worse from there. And she knows that Wednesday suspects her, so she sends Wednesday and Pugsley off to Camp Chippewa, which is run by Gary and Becky Granger, played by Peter McNichol and Christine Baranski, in just stupendous performances. And they are, it's like happy camp. And they things get so bad with them there that they lock the Adams in like a cabin full of like Michael Jackson posters and Disney movies and like try to like convert them. And it, that leads to the much coveted Thanksgiving pageant, where, you know, Wednesday in pure boss fashion, you know, is like pretending to be like going along with this pageant, which is like horribly racist and sexist and ridiculous. And then like launches a full out assault on like these like, you know, waspy campers and just burns the entire thing down. And it's fucking brilliant. The pinnacle of this movie is Debbie captures the Adams family, all of them. And she has them all locked up, and she's going to electrocute them. And she gives this monologue about her humble beginnings that is so good. It's like she just takes you through everybody that she's ever killed. It is known as the Malibu Barbie monologue. I may or may not be pulling up the monologue right now. Alex, you can cut away to it, but I just for your edification, I want to read this monologue from when Debbie Jelinski describes why she killed her parents. I don't want to hurt anybody. I don't enjoy hurting anybody.
I don't like guns or bombs or electric chairs. But sometimes people just won't listen. And so I have to use persuasion. And slides. My parents, Sharon and Dave, generous, doting, or were they? All I ever wanted was a ballerina Barbie in her pretty pink tutu. My birthday. I was 10. And you know what they got me? Malibu Barbie.
Malibu Barbie.
The nightmare.
The nerve.
That's not what I wanted. That's not who I was. I was a ballerina. Graceful, delicate. They had to go.
And the next slide shows a burning house. Like, guys, come on. This is brilliant. Like, it's full brilliance.
Yeah.
I can't get enough of Adam's Family Values. It is really, it's about protecting the family. Like, that is what, it's a definition of who they are. They are the Adams, and they're not there to hurt anybody. They're just really, really dark, but they love each other and they protect each other. And Sarah would kill me if I didn't give her full credit for this, because this is absolutely a movie that she reintroduced into my life, and I would not have picked this movie if we were not married. So she wanted me to say that. It's been said. Sarah, I said it.
Thank you, Sarah.
So there it is. Thank you, Sarah. You're the only one, only Sarah.
And I'm going to have to add that to my holiday list. I don't remember the movie at all. I don't think I've seen it since I was a kid.
So good.
Yeah. I just remember it in bits and clips.
Yeah,
you gotta watch it again. But truly an enjoyable watch from the beginning.
Yeah,
to the end.
It shows the power of family, right? It kind of hurdles the macabre really well, because they're crazy and they do crazy things, and like it's all like blood and pain and horror, and like if it was a serious movie, it would be really sadistic.
Yes,
they're able to take these really dark things and just make them light and comical because they all love each other, right? Mm-hmm. And they can do crazy stuff without getting hurt, and like. Yeah, somehow that all feels really good.
feels super good, guys. Super
so
good.
Warm and fuzzy.
So warm and fuzzy.
Yeah, man. The Adams Family Values. So, Jenny, take us on the journey.
Okay. So, to me, this is the only holiday movie. Actually, that's not true. I love all holiday movies. So, never mind. I take it back. Strike it. Reverse it. Nice. It never happened.
So now I'm nervous. What if I fuck it up?
I'll just edit it.
Great. So we open on this great orchestral brass sounding score. We're kind of sweeping over these snowy rooftops that feel very European and old school as we watch the credits fly by. And then we drop down into this busy Times Square. It's not the Times Square. It's just a square. Town Square would be what I'd want to say. Mm-hmm. And kids are running, dogs are barking, someone's selling a Christmas turkey who pops out of the cart and, you know, he has to stuff it back in. We sweep through the town and we land on these two people selling apples. And when I say people, I mean creatures. One is a rat and one is, I, you know, to give it all away.
I'm so proud of you.
So we have Mr. Gonzo as Charles Dickens. And I gotta say, it is just the best holiday movie of all time.
Who is this?
It's Mr. Applegate, sir. He's here to speak to you about his mortgage.
Please, Mr. Scrooge, I know you're very angry about this, and I didn't mean to fall behind in the payments. Lord knows it, being Christmas and all. Oh, please don't shout at me, sir. That and, of course, little Gwen. Her lungs aren't right. The doctor takes his share, don't he? I mean, you can yell and scream and you're right, but it won't do no good because I'm the stone you can't squeeze blood from, and that's the truth! Thank you for not shouting at me.
I think this is a first in what? That we've selected this movie for a prior episode.
But it's great.
No.
It's perfect. It's perfect because we said in that episode that we want to talk more about it. So now
great.
We are.
Oh no! But movie. Now I'm going to tread over the same stuff.
No, not
at all. Nick thought that this was the best Muppet movie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I did. But I think it's both. I think it's both. I think it is the best Muppet movie. I also think it is one of the best, if not the best. I do agree with you. Holiday movie. Of course, we're speaking of Muppet Christmas Carol.
Muppet Christmas Carol.
We came back, guys. We're back. We did it.
Yay. Circling all Whole around.
Circle.
You're welcome.
So talk to us about this. What are your memories of this movie? What do you love about this movie? Like, talk to us.
Oh, this is... So I think I watch this. Maybe not every year, but this was a major part of my childhood. And now I try to watch it every year, usually when I'm baking cookies or something in the background. But... You know, it's when we're talking about warm and fuzzy, this movie gives you absolutely everything. It's so funny. It's so dark. Like it came at a time when they weren't afraid to scare kids. So it's really good because there's, you know, you've got scary ghosts and fun ghosts and people who are legit angry. And Michael Caine deserves an Oscar for his performance in this movie.
Michael Caine.
Oh, yeah. I love it. And you know, I'm going to jump the gun and say the one thing that I'm missing now is when I was a kid, I watched it on VHS and it was the full movie with the breakup ballad in it. And now I can't find the breakup ballad on any.
I saw it on, maybe it was YouTube.
Oh yeah. You can watch like the scene itself on YouTube. Yeah. But like in the movie as a whole, it's not on the streaming. Yeah, no streaming, no DVDs.
Why is that?
Because they thought it was, well, one of the trivia on it says they thought it was too sad for kids, which is complete bullshit because there's a lot more sadness in this movie. But I think it was just because there's no Muppets in it and they didn't want to have a 2-minute song with just, gotcha. But it was my favorite part of the movie when I was a kid because, you know, like I have said to Nick, I love musicals and, you know, it's the girl's ballad and you get to hear this pretty song. And yeah, it's
tragic.
Talk
to me. What do you think is the scariest moment in this movie? Because I know what it is for me, but I want to know what it is for you guys.
I mean, I don't know what it might be because sounds are really scary to me, but when we're first about to see the Marleys and you know, the bell that goes ringing is so scary.
I hate that shit.
Merry
I can't, guys, I'm going to tell you something right now, and I don't even think I admitted this the first time. I cannot watch Marley and Marley.
What?
I leave the room. I don't watch it.
A Muppet movie.
I refuse to watch Marley and Marley.
Well, I think once they show up, it's not scary, but like the precursor to them with like the doorknob being weird and the bell going off and the candles blowing, that's freaky. That's straight legit horror movie.
That's like Hereditary level horrors in this Muppet movie. It's goddamn terrifying. I don't like it. I'll watch it. I listen to it and I'll sing along from the hall. I'll be like, Marley. Like, nope, not gonna do that, guys. It's really dumb.
Like it.
I mean, it makes perfect sense as a holiday movie, just given what the Muppets, and we might have talked about this the first time around too, just given what they represent, right? Like that kind of unbridled hopefulness and optimism in people, and saying, you know, like it's important that we care about each other is basically the core of who the Muppets are. So a story like Christmas Carol and a holiday, you know, just the holidays in general, like it fits right in there.
Oh, yeah.
No, completely. I mean, and also I gotta say, you know, I think that the Christmas Carol story structure is possibly one of the cleanest, like best ever. It's just so, it's, you know, it's this idea of conversion and this idea of change. And you just take this guy on three adventures. Like that's it, you know? And I love that. I've always thought that that's just such a clever way to explore character, and especially when you have Michael Caine doing like literally his Oscar worthy best, you know, and just taking this so seriously. It really is, guys. This is, if there was ever a time to go back and watch The Muppet Christmas Carol, and our producer on Broadway Podcast Network, Dory, she used to be an Imagineer for Walt Disney World, and she actually built Muppet Vision 3D. That's why it came up. That was her baby. So we had her on and we talked about Muppet movies.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I saw this trivia that Michael Caine told Brian Henson that he's going to play the movie like he's a part of the Royal Shakespeare Company, and he does exactly that. That's
what makes it work. That's what makes the performance so good. You know,
it's so true, because, you know, I'd say that to me the same thing extends to Tim Curry in Muppet Treasure Island. To me, he, like, it's because they tried to kind of capture that same magic, and it's not, I think Michael Caine beats him, you know, I mean, not beats him, it's two different performances, but like Michael Caine's hits me harder, I will say, but Tim Curry is that same thing where you just take it seriously. Like, take it seriously, like you're telling the actual story, but it just happens to be Muppets. Do you mean like, that's it, you know? And I think it really, it just elevates the thing, really works. And man. Oh no, I'm going to go. I can't wait for Christmas.
Yeah, you got to watch it. Yeah,
you can watch it now. Don't even wait for Christmas. Yeah. It's time, man.
It's the holidays. We've decided.
Put the cocoa on.
No, I got to go get a COVID test
after this conversation.
No, I'm actually,
you know, you can't catch it through your headphones, right?
I know. It's not about you. Not everything's about you.
But everyone's going to have to stay away from this microphone I'm using for a while, unfortunately. Yeah.
Dude, but are you okay? Seriously, all joking aside, you're okay. You're taking seriously.
I am okay. We are thankfully okay. It's weird. It's weird. I don't want to like undermine the seriousness of it as a thing. Like, luckily we are okay. It could have been very different. So please, everybody, take it seriously. Yeah. It's not fun. This was not a fun week that we've had. It's been a lot of just laying on the couch, just sweaty and disoriented, and with high temperatures. And oh my God,
did you get any interesting fever dreams?
I can't really remember what they were. It's like a general like fatigue, brain fog. You know, this is kind of the first time I've had to sit and put my brain back on. And luckily, I'm doing, I think I'm doing it okay.
Yeah, you did it better than I did.
I do talk good. it's just like being really sick for a while. So
all right.
Not fun.
Please rest up.
What was fun was this whole thing.
This was super fun. And Jenny, thank you so much for coming on and hanging out with us.
Of course.
You know, where can people find you? I mean, you know, obviously Hollywood Unscripted, your other podcast.
A Moment of Your Time. Yeah. So two podcasts I highly recommend listening to is Hollywood Unscripted and A Moment of Your Time. A Moment of Your Time is a collaborative one. So any of you artists out there who want to submit a piece, go to kurtko.com/a moment of your time. And they're all like 5-minute bite sized creative expression pieces. And it's really delightful. And you can find me at the Jenny Curtis on all platforms, except I don't really use Twitter. I really only use Instagram. So find
I've been trying to use Twitter. I like download it. I'm like, okay, I need a Twitter presence. Like Nick's all over it all the time. Like, I have like 3 tweets.
Once in a while, I'll think of something really funny, maybe like once a year.
Right. That's what I'm worried about. It's like, cause I have a couple times I've been sitting on my couch. I'm like, I think of something really witty and I'm like, I should post it. And then I think about, oh man, if someone went and just looked at all my tweets, it's just going to be like a couple times me splurting something out into the universe.
Yeah. It feels weird and silly. Like, social media is such a weird construct that we have, but
oh yeah.
You know, but
no, we got to do with it. You know,
we got to deal with it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a part of our life. We got to deal with it. You got to do with it, and you know, make it work. But Jenny, you are such a gem, and it's been such a pleasure.
Well, I have thoroughly enjoyed this, and I think by the time this comes out, Nick, your episode of Hollywood Unscripted is out, so everyone should go listen to that.
Yeah,
with David E. Talbert, it's amazing. Yeah. Talk about jingle, holiday movies.
Jingle.
Yeah. Jingle,
yeah.
Jangle.
Love
you. I'll set it to I'll set it to download so you get your numbers, but I'm not going to listen to it. Any more than I have to.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it either way.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, Leo, everyone stay safe out there. Wear a mask, and we will see you soon.
Happy holidays.
Little justice. Fuck yeah.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.